Welcome back to another episode of Breakfast for the Gators, part of the Stadium Gale Network and presented by our partner, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is out of Lake City, Florida, a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. And you can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate wills or trusts, and estate planning. Well, how's everyone doing? We got kind of a slow week with no football on midweek, Thursday night. But we got some primetime golf, watching Billy Horschel right now, 8-under through 17. So interesting times with football ending, but basketball kind of starting to heat up a little bit.
The Gator boys are getting hotter.
They're rolling.
It is a little, you know, we usually joke about the Thursday night football games being historically terrible, but then you get your first week without Thursday night football and you're kind of like, what do I do? The SEC plays basketball on Tuesday and Wednesdays, so you don't really have anything to watch. But I guess that's why we're here podding, so we can talk about the Gators.
Yeah, let's just jump right into it. Big win as the number 16 Gators take down LSU 79-61. I believe that moves the Gators to 38-2 their last 40 home games. And, Dev, I think you pointed out that is by a combined 4 points as well in those two losses. So all three wins lately by double digits have kind of blown out the opponent, hasn't been close in the second half. Slow start in Gainesville Tuesday night. Kind of picked it up then the last 2.5, 3 minutes after that under four timeout. Late Big Thomas Houck three. It felt nice that the Gators actually got one to go their way at the end of the first half. Guys, kind of put it on them. What'd you see, Will, out of the Gators?
I know we started a little bit slow, but that game kind of reminded me of how last year's team was, where, like, don't get me wrong, LSU is not some SEC powerhouse, but they are a pretty decent squad. I think they were inside the top 50 of KenPom when they came into the O-Dome, and the Gators just handled them. I mean, you know, enjoy it, Gator fans, because it's not always going to be like this where an SEC team comes in and we just handle them by 15, 20 points. I know that we only ended up winning by 17 or so. But the run that this team is on the last 2 years with Todd Golden at the helm and just clearly dominating SEC powerhouses, and it looks like we're in position to compete for the SEC title. That's not something that happens very often for any school, let alone, you know, the University of Florida that, like, you know, if we're honest, doesn't really have a deep, deep history of college basketball success. You know, 1994 was really the, like, original success out of, you know, a couple players here and there. But so Tuesday night, it's just fun to watch this team, you know, look like they're not even playing to their maximum potential, but they're just so much better than the other teams that they're playing. And you just got such superstars like Ruben Chinyelu, just putting on All-American effort after All-American effort. And it's nice when, like, you know, Tommy Houck goes 2 for 11 or whatever it was, and it just doesn't matter. You're still going to dominate the other team because the pieces around him are so good.
Yeah, I'd like to point out it was – awesome sitting there with Lovelace, Dev, and M watching the Gators Tuesday night. I know three of the four of us were in attendance for another midweek SEC game. It was almost comical at one point watching Ruben. I mean, it felt like every offensive rebound, he was there making a play. If it wasn't him getting a rebound, it was Thomas Houck making a championship-level play to keep the ball alive. But I mean, at one point in the game, we looked up and it was 25 rebounds for LSU and 21 for Ruben. Jake, what did you see out of the Gators Tuesday?
Yeah, I just thought we kind of talked about it at halftime, sitting there with Emily, Devin, and you, and it just kind of felt like a ho-hum first half. Like, it didn't feel like they weren't playing bad, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't like it was like firing all cylinders and they were lighting it up from three or anything like that. Like, it never felt like their half-court offense until maybe the last two and a half minutes. Had a really nice flow, and all of a sudden you look up and they're up double digits at halftime. You know what I mean? And I think that's what kind of Will's talking about, where it feels a little bit like last year where, I mean, you almost just show up and you win by double digits against a decent SEC opponent. That's just like, it's not normal. But this squad the last 2 years has made it feel normal, especially in the O-Dome. And I was really impressed with the crowd for a Tuesday night against a team that's not necessarily a marquee matchup on a Tuesday night. It wasn't a Tennessee, a Kentucky. I thought there was a lot of juice in the O-Dome, and Ho-hum up by double digits at halftime and then rolled the rest of the way.
Yeah, we've talked about it, I think going into the Tennessee game, going into the Georgia game maybe, how when the Gators play at home under Todd Golden, you just expect to win and to win in a dominant way. And this was just an extension of that. It was another example, another data point of just – I think Todd called it a systematic win for the program. And I think that that's a great way to put it just because, you know, you looked up, like Jake said, it was kind of a ho-hum half. I think our leading score at halftime had like 8 points or 7 points. Like it wasn't like you had, you know, there's been games this year where Tommy has had 14 points at the half or Kondo or Ruben or whoever's night it is. They're into double digits and you know that they're the ones that are the lead guy scoring the ball in the first half. And we didn't really have that. I mean, we were up, 38-26 at the half. And it just didn't feel like we were playing our best ball and then come out the team. Right. It really felt like, you know, this is what this team is. We just go out. We're relentless. We're bigger than you. We're going to wear you down. And for how ho-hum the first half felt, Ruben Chinyelu took that game over. And it's so much fun to watch to see it. I've watched every minute of every Gator basketball game this year. There's been nobody in the country that plays harder than Tommy Houck and Ruben Chinyelu. And those two guys are some of the only champions in the country. Like, I don't know if UConn has any of their champions left from their either of their two championship teams.
They got Caravan left.
Yeah. That's right. So you're dealing with two of the only guys in the country that, you know, might have any sort of content feeling about them, like they can go home and see their national championship ring, and they play so hard every single night, like they're hungry as ever, like it's their last chance to play basketball, and it's just such a joy to watch, man. And when you have that much of an advantage in the front court, this team takes advantage of it. We out rebounded them 50-30. Chinyelu had 21 rebounds by himself.
That's crazy.
It's just this team's really gotten fun to watch. And, you know, the guards were much maligned early, but they've really started to come into their own. They found their role. They've gotten out of the shadow of last year's team, it feels like. And this team is starting to form its own identity. And it's been so much fun to watch. And one other point to make about the last couple of games against Vanderbilt and then now against LSU, better than 33% or better from 3-point range in both of those games. And that's been kind of the number that we've said to watch out for, that if this team can start consistently shooting in that low 30% range from 3-point range, they're starting to do it. And the dominant systematic wins are starting to roll in. 5-1 in the SEC, 14-5 overall. And boys, I'm starting to get excited about the thought of going to Tampa for the first two rounds of an NCAA tournament.
I think one of the things I was most impressed with was just the ability to come out, like you were talking about, with how much fire they play with after such a big win. That was really an emotional win that came right down to the wire, you know, get a big shot, especially with Xavier Lee, with everything. He's been dealing mainly just his poor play for the most of the season, but, you know, he's talked off, you know, in different videos and stuff about how it was really just like a mental thing and it was affecting him and that sort of thing. But to have such an emotional big time, like season defining best win of the season, and then to come out and just dominate another SEC opponent like that is, I think Lovie said it best, like it's just not normal. And it's kind of what we've grown accustomed to between last year's team and this year's team. But it's just a special type of championship level culture that you don't really see in like sports in general. You know, NFL teams are very prone to let down spots. College football teams certainly prone to let down spots. College basketball teams, I mean, how often do you see, you know, Purdue the other night loses a midweek game? And it just happens. But this team seems to come out focused, and maybe it's because Todd has gotten them to buy in since they shot so poorly at the beginning of the year. And we were sort of basically making it sound like we were going to have to play rock fight basketball, super high intensity defensive and rebounding. And now that the shots are going in, it's just getting so much easier. But I was just so unbelievably impressed with that. I mean, that just speaks so highly about the culture that Todd Golden has built here at Florida basketball with this program. And just, you know, you walk into the O-Dome, you're going to lose. We're going to go over to whatever place you play in, and we're going to dominate you there. And then whenever, you know, we go and play in the postseason, we're going to have fans show up and we're going to make them proud. And it's just really great to be a Florida Gator right now.
Yeah, it's just not the Vanderbilt win. You also had to travel 1,000-plus miles, go to Norman, Oklahoma, in a snooze fest Tuesday night. You respond, beat Vandy, then you come back home to a lively crowd who's expected to see a lot. And despite getting a 5-20 performance between Kondo and Houck from the floor, you still score 79 points. You blow them out by 18. You shoot just over 50%, I think 14-27 from the free throw line. You're still kind of able to dominate. Just the culture and team he's built. And it's finally that continuity that we kind of lacked in the beginning of the year, the new guards that we anticipated. Obviously, we didn't like seeing it. But, you know, we pointed out, I think on the previous show, and certainly Tuesday night, the seal outs and the chemistry between the guards and the bigs is certainly coming along at the right time. I thought we had three or four of those seal outs that we had nice cuts by either Boogie, Xavier, and Urban had one as well in the second half. Everything just piecing together right now for Todd Golden and the Gators.
You know, one note on Todd, this is the third straight year where come mid to late January, it feels like this team's a lot better than it was, you know, at the beginning of November or whatever. 2 years ago, they got the win at Rupp Arena. It was a midweek game. I think it went to overtime or came down to the wire. And they went on a nice run, got into the tournament comfortably. Last year, they had the big win, I think it was early February, against Auburn, where it kind of stamped them as like a true national title contender. And here we are in mid-February again going, look, if they made a run to the Final Four, nobody nationally would be surprised. The team's a lot better than it was in November for the third straight year, and that's a huge testament to their entire staff, Todd and his whole staff.
Yeah. One other thing, to the point about this not being normal and how historically good of a run we're on, 38-2 in the last 40 home games, going back to 3 years ago. The 06 and 07 national championship teams that went back-to-back went 37-2 over those 2 years at home. So it's right on par with that run. So
and that was not that was not the same SEC.
Correct.
But you know, speaking of the coaching staff, I found a stat from this guy Nick Bateman, college basketball guru, who is becoming my favorite stats nerd on Twitter for college basketball, mainly because he keeps tweeting a lot of pro Florida. It's not propaganda because it's all factual, but he did this splits of Florida's lineup data. And there was a Florida lineup that had Urban, Xavier, Tommy Howe, Chinyelu, and Condon that their net rating was minus 64.4 on the season, which is obviously horrific. And that lineup has not played together over the last five games where we've had four quad one wins and then the win over over LSU. And so it seems like, you know, we talk about the guards sort of building the chemistry with the bigs and the seals and getting easier buckets at the rim. It seems like the coaching staff is really finding a rhythm with like when guys should play. It seems like they've been very touch and go with like Zay Brown's minutes and Micah Hanlogden's minutes and, you know, rotating Urban and Xavier in there. And so just a masterclass from Todd game to game and week to week on playing the hot hands and finding the right matchups and finding the lineups that, really are giving us the highest output and maximizing the talent. And we say all of that, and we're still, I don't even think, reaching, you know, our ceiling. He even said it the other night after the LSU game. He's like, I thought we played fine, but not, like, great.
Yeah, I love how analytically aware they are. They just, yeah. It's like they did it. It's so much fun to root for a team, that a program that's as good and just sound as this one is right now.
And the way he like pumps up the crowd and gets us fired up when, like, you know, even if it's just like a midweek game or something like it's just, he's the best. It's awesome.
I've said the last few times that I've been to the O-Dome that it's so much fun to go and watch him coach in person. just because just it's all of that. The way he works the refs, gets the crowd fired up. It's like watching the game with your buddies, but he's on the sideline coaching the team up and getting them to play at the level that you want your coach to have your team playing at. And then gets just as fired up as we are when they start playing that way. So it's awesome.
And, you know, we're up 23 points late in the second half, and he's reviewing calls, out of bound touches. You know, like, the guy coaches for all 40 minutes, regardless of where we are, you know, on the scoreboard. So,
hey, that margin of victory matters for your net ranking. You know, sure, he was probably pissed that we you know, put the scrubs in, not the scrubs, but like the bottom of the bench in the last 2 minutes, and they sort of let LSU sort of gain like 5 or 6 points there and drop.
Two of us were really mad in the crowd during that spurt at the end. We might have had Florida minus 18.5 second half bet, but it's another time, another story for another day. I did see on KenPom that we talked about us utilizing, kind of forming our identity a little bit, going through the bigs and the sellouts being better. We're actually 25th in the country in average 2-point shot distance. I think our average 2-point shot is from inside 4.5 feet. So it just kind of shows you, and I think we're shooting almost 58% from the 2-point mark as well. So we're getting a lot of really good quality shots. If not, it's Ruben Chinleyu or Kondo or Hal cleaning up on the offensive glass. Even Micah did that a little bit in the first half of LSU. I know he didn't have his best game, but they're starting to play towards their identity. And we haven't even spoken about Klavzar yet from the outside. I mean, career high, 5 triples, something that, you know, we talked about, we need to be around that 7-8 mark. We end up hitting 9, courtesy of his 5, including a near 4-point play that we somehow turn into another 7-point possession. I can't believe John Rothstein hasn't responded back to our tweets. Man, someone's got to confirm if that's a record or not.
That's nuts. That really is nutty. But talking about Urban – the player development, man. I mean, just another player that looks vastly different than he did a year ago. There's times like SEC play, he looked kind of overmatched. He had a few moments against Auburn where I think he scored double digits in a big game. But kind of down the stretch run in the tournament, NCAA tournament, he didn't play. I don't think he played after the UConn game.
Nope.
And so it's not just – we always knew, like, the shot was there, right? But, like, he looks so much more capable as a defender. He looks so much more comfortable when he has to handle the ball. He looks comfortable making decisions and getting the ball out of his hands when, his shot's not there. And then, obviously, a guy like Ruben Chinleyu, I mean, the development is obvious, you know, his offensive game, how far it's come. A lot to like.
I know we still have Carlin Hartman, so we can credit him with the development of Ruben. But we saw a lot of coaching turnover this past year with multiple guys getting head coaching jobs, and we're still seeing this player development out of Golden and his staff. So, you know, not just for the players putting the work, but him hiring the right guys this offseason as well to continue that development and getting these guys to play at a higher level. And it was noticeable. Urban also had a haircut, nice fresh cut Tuesday night at LSU, and career high 5 triples. So I think everyone needs to get a haircut weekly.
Yeah.
Moving forward.
Speaking of Coach Golden's coaching tree, I just looked it up. John Anderjack, Zach Campbell, and obviously rebuilding them. They're only 9-10, but notable. The way Todd really started in getting this thing rolling was he started beating teams at home, and Anderjack is 7-0 at home. I'm sure Campbell has a wonderful home court advantage, but that's pretty impressive. And
that's the only hit from Breakfast with the Gators.
Yeah.
This year.
Exactly. And Kevin Hovde at Columbia is 12-6, also 7-1 at home. So the assistant offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator that we shipped off to smaller mid-major schools are off to pretty good starts in year one. And I think that's just a testament of Todd not only being able to develop players but also develop coaches, and that's just it's nice. It hurts when these guys leave, but it's great to see like that's what you want, you know, is churning out high level coaches, because that means that they're coaching your team at a high level, and it's just good for everybody.
And a good note on the staff too, and Todd, that it doesn't feel like there's been a drop off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It doesn't, like, this happens maybe sometimes in football or basketball, like a coordinator leaves, a CEO type coach. And Todd's obviously super involved in the offense and stuff too. But it doesn't feel any less innovative, does it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it still feels like it's home, and it still feels like it's progressing throughout the year. So credit to you know, him, and then obviously the guys he hired.
Yeah, I think Devin and I talked about it on our way home back to Jacksonville Tuesday, is just the ability to adapt is, I mean, remarkable. You know, last year we were so reliant on three guards. Now we're reliant on three big men, especially having the offense go through Tommy and the other bigs, more of a focal aspect of that offense. And, you know, we're not hitting the three ball. I know we've had a few good games recently, knocking down 8 and 9. But just to have the ability to adapt. And we talked about that with football, with Buster Faulkner having the ability to play within the personnel that he has on the roster. We're really seeing that this year with Golden. So it's like you said, Jake, no drop off. And we're just having a new identity, a championship identity through the bigs. And, you know, I was looking at the SEC standings. I think we're sitting atop with Texas A&M, who's 5-1 in league play. But they haven't played anybody in the top eight of the conference yet. I think we've got Vanderbilt, Georgia, and Missouri. I think we're 2-1 at stretch, and Tennessee. So we've played some good opponents so far. We get a little bit of a – I know we got Auburn Saturday in the O-Dome. They're not great. They can't defend worth a lick. I think they're 100th in KenPom defensively in efficiency. I think 15th offensively. Another big test. He's playing against a friend. I know Pearl he played on the same international team with the same national team as him. They are the same coaching tree. He was under him at Auburn. So another big test, and hopefully, you know, 39-2 our last 41 home games.
Yeah, it should be a really fun matchup. It's become one of my favorite games, especially under Golden now with the relationship between the Pearls and Todd. I really enjoy just watching them coach against each other, and I think that it'll be a cool dynamic with Steven, considering that they're even closer friends, obviously, than Bruce and Todd were. But yeah, I think that it's a disappointing Auburn team a little bit. I think that they were kind of destined to be disappointing. I think it never really works out. It seems like when you have this kind of coronation of your next coach right before the season starts, getting inserted, and, you know, maybe a little bit of a flawed roster coming off the Final Four for them last year. So it should be it's how every home game is for Florida now. You go into it thinking the baseline is Florida by 10, Florida by 15, and it seems like Todd consistently delivers on, you know, double digit wins at home against SEC opponents, even quality SEC opponents. So excited to see the guys come out and play.
I'd like to point out, internally, this podcast called the Stephen Pearl versus Todd Golden matchup back in like May. So that we knew correct. This was coming.
I am going to miss Sweaty Bruce out there coaching on the sidelines.
Hey, does anybody remember the game? This was probably like 18 or 19 maybe, where Bruce Pearl like spent all day like at the pool in Gainesville. showed up to the game like super, super somber. I forget what year that was, but – anyway, that's, I always think of Bruce Pearl, and like that's what I think of when I think of Bruce Pearl.
I always had gaudy orange, all orange suit that he would just sweat through in the first half and come out with a brand new one, just like having to sweat right through that one as well.
Yeah, I remember him in the Chris Lofton days when he had Tennessee rolling, and he came in, and I think it was maybe in like the Irving Walker days, and just got so mad about something, and he took his jacket off, and it was like the real Sweaty Bruce all time moment. And it's funny. It's like him and Calipari could not stand him, wouldn't say a nice thing about him, hated their guts when they were at Kentucky and Tennessee. All of a sudden they leave those places and they go to places that are competing with Kentucky and Tennessee and beating them and sort of making their lives difficult. And I start to like them a lot more. And so I will actually miss Sweaty Bruce, and Todd seemed to have his number, even going back to his first year when we almost beat them on the road. But Castleton slipped there on the final possession. So hopefully Todd has Stephen's number two. He probably, you know, Auburn fans are probably wishing that they had, Todd Golden as their head coach and not Stephen Pearl. But we lucked out with that one.
Hey, while you're giving applauses, Will, we had another, I know, only just 4 of 11 shooting. He did have 2 steals, some big dunks, a Boogie Flan. I mean, he's still finding the groove. I think he only had 2 recorded steals, but probably made 4 or 5 deflections that also, you know, were transition buckets, or Tommy got it recorded as a steal. But coming into his own a little bit in Gainesville, even enjoying eating some popcorn on the sidelines during the middle of a game.
I was going to say, even acquiring some popcorn.
Having some fun.
I've been very hard on Boogie, and I sat there for a moment on Tuesday night, and I was like, dadgummit, I'm starting to love this guy. When he's making mid-range jump shots and getting tips and deflections and running out and dunking it and just making the other point guard's life miserable, and then he's, you know, we're up 20 points and he's eating popcorn in the crowd. Yeah, I love it. I love it. Not afraid to admit that, you know, I might have overreacted just a touch. It happens. It happens to the best of us.
Who amongst us? Right?
Who amongst us hasn't been spectacularly wrong before?
Doesn't he just seem super comfortable now?
He does. Yeah, and you know what? I mean, that might be it too. I don't think I was wrong. I was correct at the time. And then there was a material change. He got much more comfortable. He started making shots and playing a lot better. And I say, you know what? Great job, Boogie. Now I love you.
My point on like him being comfortable is, like, it doesn't matter if he's scoring 7 or having a night where he's like scoring 23. Like, he just seems comfortable running the show. If it's his night to score, like, he'll take the jumper. If it's not, like, he's okay passing it. And regardless, it seems like he's still wreaking havoc on the defensive end, picking the ball up, you know, half court and stuff. And I feel like that's the biggest difference lately, is just, it doesn't matter what if he's the guy scoring or not. He's running the show.
And
him grabbing that popcorn is just indicative of how much more comfortable he is now, right, versus a month and a half ago. Where can you imagine him, you know, going in and finishing a tough layup and then going in and grabbing popcorn from the second row? No, he's comfortable.
I certainly could not imagine that.
Will would have demanded all popcorn to be removed from the facility for the next game.
He also, you know, since we're apparently dunking on Coach Will, people are forgetting, did call for Boogie to stop shooting the end of half shots with 2 seconds. Well, he passed it to Tommy Houck and we got a nice 3 out of it. So, you know, if you're going to dunk on me, make sure you assist me with,
we were getting there. We were right. Getting there.
I'm sure that was the next point you were bringing up.
It's huge. Thank you for your service.
Hey, you know, I mean, whenever I see something, I got to call it out and say it, you know. Sometimes it's right. A lot of times it's wrong. But
they did try to run.
Finally right, I'm going to say it.
They did try to run the ISO for a while. Like, it took him down to like a second and a half before he passed it up to Hout.
Baby steps.
Hey, we did publicly proclaim ourselves as the Tough Coaching Podcast this weekend.
We are.
We are.
If there's anybody you're seeing for it.
We're old school. It's what we do. And you know what? It brought us a national championship last year.
That's right. So, we're the Bobby Knight of podcasting.
And we're working on football with Coach Summerall too.
There you go.
We weren't hard enough on Billy Napier. That probably was,
that's what it was. Problem.
We needed to have Billy Napier running stadiums for the last 4 years.
Limit his water intake, you know, until he's really dehydrated. All right, fine. Go get some, Billy.
One tough coaching kind of guy that's solidified himself as the eighth man, Isaiah Brown, puts together another great performance. 13 minutes, 8 points, 5 boards, knocked down a pair of triples. Had a, I think in the second half, had a massive offensive rebound where LSU probably went on, like, you know, a little 5-6-0 run to calm the crowd a little bit. Isaiah makes a big time offensive rebound. I think he even put it back up, or at least dished it to Ruben or somebody to lay it in. Just Jake, what just jumps out to you about him? I mean, his athleticism, he's got to be the most athletic guy we've got on the team.
He's explosive for sure. What stood out to me the other night, he had 5 rebounds, 4 of them were offensive rebounds. And so he just seems like a guy right now that's playing with a huge motor. And like, I think what happens is when a guy gets more reps like that, especially a guy that doesn't have a big role. And like you saw at the beginning of the season, there'd be games where like he didn't touch the floor. And so you get in and you're kind of like pressing. You don't know exactly where you're supposed to be or whatever. Now it seems like a guy that's like, okay, I know my role. I kind of know I'm in this 8 spot. Like, I don't have to worry about putting up a ton of points to keep playing. He's crashing the glass. He's passing it when nothing's there. And then You know, he's even hitting a shot or two when he's open. It just doesn't feel like he's forcing anything. He's playing hard on the defensive end and crashing the glass, and just feels like he knows his role. It's been a nice development throughout the year to have that eighth man.
Yeah, and certainly a guy we're going to need to, you know, if anybody, credit to Boogie, he hasn't seemed to be in foul trouble during this little confidence boost he's had the last five games as well. But, you know, if we do get in a situation where Lee, Urban, or Boogie is a little bit of foul trouble and Isaiah's got to play 18, 19 minutes, he is building that confidence now while we're kind of rolling teams. And I think he's going to be a big piece of this cornerstone piece off the bench for this team moving forward.
He knocked down a nice three too.
Right.
In the first half when the game was still close, he knocked down a crucial three where, you know, if he had missed that and LSU gets up and gets some confidence, then the game might play out differently. But I thought that was huge because we have been saying that if he could hit a couple corner threes or something and make teams really respect his jump shot, then he's going to be able to drive to the hoop and take advantage of that athleticism and create opportunities for dunks or dump offs or just easy baskets. And so,
you know, in another note on him, this was the Vandy game. It was, I want to say it was semi late in the second half. He's just making the right play. He had a really tough drive to the basket where he got fouled. It might have been the play where Vandy's guard fouled out.
Yeah.
But went to the free throw line, made a couple free throws. And that was one of those plays where it's like, okay, he's made a couple threes in the corner or whatever when he was open. They took the extra step out, and he knew to drive and was tough and physical and got to the line. So he just seems like a guy that's like making the smart play right now.
Yeah, we discussed that earlier in the week, and just his awareness, you know, especially for a guy that didn't contribute last year at all, has contributed and really just up until the last 14 days. In those critical moments, he's just got great awareness. That's credit to the coaching staff, him as well, buying in. I know Neil Blackman on our show is talking about his consistency in practice or in the film room or wherever it may have been. It's certainly like he's putting those pieces together to start the new year.
To that point, I would want to ask Will anything. I'd want to ask Neil if that consistency in practice was a matter of him, you know, not being focused or not making the right play or a matter of effort. Because when he's been on the floor, it's like all of these guys that were on the team last year, especially, play so hard. And he's one of those guys, too, that maybe he doesn't in practice, but he gets on the court in a game and decides it's time to go 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
But I really – it's one of those things that it makes you think that the ceiling for this team can be very high because of how hard all the guys that are defending champions play. And they're playing like they won another one. And it's so easy. Like, I always think back to the 2009 football team that, you know, you go 12-0 in the regular season, but something just kind of fell off that entire season. Like, it wasn't, you know, coming as easy as it did post Ole Miss game in 2008. And I feel like this year's basketball team is really they've got it where they're playing hard and you don't feel like there's a missing piece in terms of like the hunger on the roster. Like, they all feel like they're hungry and they play in a way that they give you the impression that they won another championship, that's what they're fighting for. So I know that's kind of cliche and kind of corny, but I think that there's something really to that, that they all play like championships are the standard and that's what they're going for. So
it's contagious.
Yeah. And it's led by the guys that have already done it and that won the championship last year. They're not going to – They're the ones that have the most excuse to not be hungry, and yet they play with their hair on fire and they play harder than everybody else. So that's something that's a championship DNA in the program that leads to systematic wins where you're, you know, beating LSU by 18 in a letdown spot.
Man, I just want to talk about Ruben Chinyo more too. That guy rocks.
He's so awesome. Much fun watching him play basketball.
Awesome, man.
I mean, it was a comedy show at one point there in the second half. I mean, everyone in the crowd was just laughing that he was just grabbing every single rebound and hold and just dragging him to the ground, which is pretty impressive. You can drag someone that size to the floor. And he made the rebound, almost got the board.
We talked about it a couple times at the game the other night. And, like, do this Saturday. Like, a couple times, like, whether we're on offense or defense, like, just, like, pick a possession where you don't watch the ball if it goes into the net or not, and just watch how hard he works in the paint. It is unbelievable. When the ball goes up, how hard he's working to get position and stuff. I mean, it's incredible to watch.
It's like Dennis Rodman when he was going through in The Last Dance, sort of the way he got rebounds, and he was like, you can tell the angles of the ball. Like,
yeah, it's
and I think doesn't Ruben want to be a doctor? Isn't he like, I'm pretty sure I've heard that he like wants to go to med school and like all this stuff. And so I just wonder if he is super in tune with, you know, physics and that sort of thing. And he just sees the arc of the ball go up and off the rim. And because it's uncanny the way he, like, there was one that stuck out late in the game that, like, the ball ended up hitting the floor and nobody knew it was going to, like, bounce there. And he was by, like,
he's like throwing it down that side of the court.
Yeah. Yeah. And nobody else knew that it was going to go there. And I was just like, this guy's unreal. He's like Dennis Rodman going back and forth. Watching the got his protractor out, watching where the ball's gonna fall and what angle it's gonna bounce off at.
I think that what a sight that's gonna be one day. You're gonna go to the doctor with the flu and Dr. Chin's gonna be there. That's gonna be awesome.
Oh, that's great. Think about how many times too, like he had 21 rebounds. Think about how many times he doesn't get a rebound in the stat sheet because he caused a foul under the hoop, or like he tipped it and Zay came in, or he boxed out two guys and Tommy was able to come in and get a rebound. Like, it is unbelievable. I mean,
he's like averaging drawing a flagrant foul one a game now. and it doesn't even count. I think, was it the Arizona game all the way back then when his jersey got ripped up?
Yeah.
And that one didn't get called. I mean, he's unreal, and it's crazy because we've, you know, I every time I think, especially with the 20 rebounds, I think that tied the Odom record, but this will be a nice deep cut for a lot of people who've been watching Gator basketball for a while. When Mark Wise was the color commentator, he used to always talk about how Will Youget was the most gifted rebounder he'd ever seen in practice and all this stuff, and was so convinced that Will Youget was going to break the Odom rebounding record. And Will Youget was an unbelievable player for his role on the 2014 team, but not even close to as good of a rebounder as Ruben Chinyelu is. Like, this is, I mean, it's historic what we're seeing this guy do this year.
I watched Billy Donovan on a podcast. I saw a clip on Twitter this week talking about, like, he's preached it to his guys at Florida. I don't know if he did at Providence, but I think it started at Florida. He had some analytical guy figure out, how much time do you have actually had the basketball in your hands? I think the big man had it in his hand for like less than, you know, 40 seconds in a game. And to your point, Jake, you just watch him without the basketball, him going in there, fighting for a position, getting to the right spot. You know, they didn't even go through Ruben at all in the first half offensively. I don't think they gave him a legitimate touch. They come out of the break in the second half, first possession, they feed it down low to Rube. He gets a dunk or a lay-in. You know, he works – really the only time he gets the basketball is when he is grinding for boards and going right back up. I mean,
you have to reward that too. Like, it's such a good thing that he's developed like he has on offense, because you're starting to reward the hard work that he puts in for you. Like, when he goes – it makes it so much – it makes him willing to work that hard, knowing that he's worked on his offensive game and gets rewarded for it. Right. With those big touches and those post touches.
He's developed enough where he can like do stuff offensively now too, right?
Yeah.
It's like even sweeter.
But it's also
last year you just knew that they went in.
Right.
Like this year you're surprised if they don't go in.
Or hope that Tommy and Condon are around to get an offensive rebound and a putback.
Yeah.
That's the culture that Golden's built, is like he just understands his role and he's A-okay with it. Like the offense doesn't need to go through him. He doesn't need to get a touch every, you know, four or five, six possessions. He might get one or two through him, a half, if that, and he's just going to clean up. Like, he's going to get his points through rebounding and being in the right spots.
Go ahead, Jake.
I was just going to say, this might be like exaggeration and like some like basketball ball knowers might like not like the exaggeration I'm going to make, but like the last like 5 to 6 games, like it's very Oscar Tshiebwe.
That's what I've been saying.
He is such a force down there. When Florida played Kentucky those couple of years where he was so good, it was like when the ball went up, you're just like, okay, he's probably going to get the rebound, right? And if he gets
automatic 20 and 15.
Right. And if he gets the ball in the low post, like, good luck. You're going to get bullied. And
you know what I'm discovering? It's unfortunate Jake doesn't listen to us when he's on the show.
I couldn't tell if he was trolling me for a second.
Guys, I don't know if this has been said before, but I'm really starting to see like shades of Oscar Tshiebwe.
Hey, can someone else Ruben Chimulu's game?
Yeah, Will,
I've been making comparisons for the last 2 weeks.
call Sam and see if he can make it the next show and say it too. It's awesome to watch.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. I mean, it's great. And like the way – it's not even just the way he knows his role. Like Condon's really good at it too. Like other than when he takes a three-pointer, which he's calmed it down a little bit, he passed up multiple against LSU until the game was well out of reach. But he like nobody. I don't think there's another big in America that runs the floor the way he does. And when we get out in transition and he's there, like the way he can dribble the ball to start the fast break reminds me of the way Joakim Noah do it, and the way he just like dominated UCLA in that national championship game because they didn't have anybody that could stop Joakim Noah running the point. And he just, I guess it must be the you know, Australian rules football in him where he's just used to looking, you know, downfield for guys to pass to. But he literally runs the fast break like a, you know, almost like a small forward kind of would, and just, you know, running to the rim and getting dunks and setting up guys. It's beautiful to watch this team.
Well, yeah, like not to look too far ahead, because I mean most of this season's still kind of unwritten, but there's a world where, you know, Condon hasn't really improved his shooting, doesn't get a great draft grade back. I don't know what Chinyelu's value is as an NBA player. And, I mean, can you imagine bringing Condon and Chinyelu back to next year's team?
Chinyelu strikes me as a guy, like, in the NIL world that just, like, he can make some money in college. Right.
Chef's like, wants to be a doctor. There's a great med school on campus for him.
Florida Basketball Hour was actually talking, and Eric Fawcett was basically saying, you know, Condon is probably in a position now where his draft stock hasn't really raised, even though he's averaging like 15 points, 8 rebounds a game and still kind of, you know, catching flack from Florida fans because it's almost like his bad plays are like a little loud in the air ball. You know, whenever he shoots a three and misses it, it's not like a Boogie Flan brick. Like, you're lucky if it hits the rim.
And if he has one turnover in a game, it's like an ugly, sloppy.
Yeah.
Like, they're loud.
For every really good pass he has a couple of, like, I'm just going to throw it directly to a guard.
Yeah. but Eric was talking about, and Neil a little bit, about how we could be in position where we're bringing, you know, obviously Tommy Houck's going to be a lottery pick. Ruben, it's like the way he's playing, he might end up being a first round pick. We could see a world where Condon is in very high demand and can make more as a college basketball player than he would on a two-way contract. And so if he could come do it at the University of Florida and try to go, you know, who knows, maybe three in a row, he might want to do that.
It's not like Condo hasn't developed. I think his inside game has gotten so much
better. Oh, yeah.
Once he gets command of the basketball down there on the low block and he's got a one-on-one situation, he is light years better than he has his first 2 years on campus.
And sure. I mean, like once you get into February and March, everything could change. Like at this time last year, none of us thought that Condon was coming back because he just played so hard and everything. And his shot looked a lot better, but then he rolls his ankle, kind of like literally limps through the year, you know, still testament to how hard he plays. He's the, you know, beating all the Houston guys on the ground for the loose ball in the national championship. But, clearly his draft stock went to like, oh yeah, this guy's definitely going to be drafted to coming back. And so, you know, he's shooting like 15% from three. If, you know, we get into the stretch in March where all the scouts eyes are on the game and he starts banging in a couple threes, would one be great for Florida because it probably means we repeat as national champions, but two, it might mean that he's going to be drafted again.
I do applaud
the sacrifice I'm willing to make.
That is a sacrifice I'm willing to make as well. You know what he probably needs?
Tough coaching.
A little bit of breakfast with the Gators, tough coaching.
I do applaud him. I guess he's heard the podcast. The green light disappeared. He shot one time early, like sometime in the first half, and then the green light went away. He passed up like five decent looks. I was like, and the crowd actually even cheered every time he passed it up to somebody. So he's learning.
I was surprised. I looked at the box score. He took three, and I felt like I couldn't remember three because there was so many he passed up, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a reason why he's having to pass them up. They're wide
they
open.
They were taken out of, like, game was out of reach. And so it was shooting practice at that point.
Yeah. Right. I'm fine with him working on the shooting when we're up by 22 with six minutes left.
I think as the Tough Coaching Podcast, we encourage, taking those sorts of shots, live game reps when the game is out of hand.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. The conference play Ollie minutes are Condon 3-point shooting minutes.
I like that.
That could be it. Is we roll out a lineup of Ingram, Lloyd, Condon, Mikic and Ollie, and we have Mikic and Ollie there rebounding, and they all just kick it to Condon.
just let Condon play. let Condon play the two in garbage time at the end. Just spot him up and set him a screen and let him try to shoot a couple threes.
Yeah.
That's anything else to wrap up hoops wise? Big one Saturday, Final Four rematch. I know it doesn't still have this. It doesn't have the same intensity as we wish, you know, with the Final Four rematch coming to Gainesville. It's still the logos.
It's a sellout.
It's a pretty good time. 4 o'clock on a Saturday. It's a great time. We'll be in the town a little early, get some lunch, hit dog, roll over to the basketball game, and have ourselves a little Saturday in Gainesville.
Yeah, no, nothing really on hoops. I know that in football, we've got a pretty good recruiting weekend coming up. I think we have it's like seven or eight blue chip offensive linemen visiting in the
three
same
of
weekend.
Them five stars. Yeah,
I am pretty convinced that is our most blue chip offensive lineman visiting in the same weekend since like Steve Adazio was the offensive line coach.
That's probably the most five stars we've had combined just in one weekend that we had in the last 4 years. That wasn't there probably to watch the other team play.
Yeah,
I gotta ask Will, is the uniform police? Will they be wearing any Gator logos around campus or?
Who, me?
No, the football staff.
The football team has not been wearing the Florida logo. I think they have to achieve at least bowl eligibility. And, you know, maybe we should take the Gator script off the helmets until they get a win. What do you think about that?
I think we're going to get black stripes on the helmets during fall camp.
I think I would immediately call for John Summerall's firing if he did that.
I think freshmen and transfers back in the day under a certain coach that also did not allow players to wear the Gator logo.
Is that what it's from? Like, I had no idea that was a thing.
Yeah, Urban didn't let freshmen and transfers have the stripe on during practice. They just had an all-orange helmet, and I don't think the team during, like, this time of the year during winter and summer workouts wore the Gator logo. You had to earn it.
That's crazy.
I love it. You know, we're old school coaches. That's an old school thing. Summerall, I mean, another guy that I just coached up really tough. And now he's performing the way that we want him to.
Nice.
Things could change. He could start missing some shots. But right now he's kind of feeling it. He's, you know, eating popcorn with the fans, so to speak, and having fun doing it. So hopefully he keeps it up and we can get some of these five-star offensive hoggies to commit.
I wonder when he's going to get introduced at the basketball game. Usually that's this time of the year in league play, transfer portal. Yeah. I know it's still open. You just can't enter. Still a big recruiting weekend, but I'd like to imagine he would be there Saturday.
Now is perfect timing, 49 minutes into Breakfast with the Gators, right after we've talked about there being eight blue-chip offensive linemen on campus this weekend. If you're not donating to Florida Victorious, go ahead and start. Empty out the wallets and let's go grab some of these hoggies.
Buy that Florida Victorious bourbon.
As many bottles as you want, and then we'll drink a bottle for every win this fall.
I predict that Summerall will get announced on Valentine's Day for the Kentucky game.
I'll be really upset because I will not be there.
Well, I don't know that they're scheduling around you.
They should. as the lone like rowdy reptile in the club section at some of these games. They should schedule. I bring the energy down there. Shout out to
Dan. Are you out there with the rowdy reptiles, letting them know that you still suck and you're ugly?
Dude, we got to change something with that. It is. There was one point. God, I wish I could remember what the chant was, but it was so bad that I think the LSU players are even laughing at us. Because it was still pretty early in the first half, or it was a respectable game at that point. And it was embarrassing. I mean, it's not the House of Horrors, I can tell you that. Maybe our record indicates that, but the students certainly not bring that same energy and fire like they used to.
I think they do. Their chants are just bad.
You're the mayor of Gainesville. That's on the if you want to get reelected, you got to come up with new chants for the rowdy reptiles to employ going forward.
I think they do put a printout 8.5 by 11 of the chants. I think I'm gonna go in there early enough one game, just swap them all out with what I want them to say, and maybe some of these guys that are there for the first time are like, oh, these are way better, and we'll have a pretty good student section again.
Yeah.
It's a nice political agenda.
Yeah, yeah.
The girl in the glasses with the screechy voice that you can hear anywhere in the arena is not going to be happy with this segment.
We'll leave a muzzle in that seat.
I looked at Devin at one point during the game and was like, dude, that's just terrible.
I walked into work Wednesday and someone's like, man, can you hear that girl just as loud as you can on TV?
It's so bad.
It is deafening.
When Scott Strickland finally flipped the cameras so that we saw the correct side, he did not realize that putting the sounds right there was gonna actually it was gonna make it worse.
She's got to be about to graduate, right?
That's part of the home court advantage, man. You don't
it
think
is.
LSU hey, no, like she, either.
She's not about to graduate. She wants to be a doctor too.
You know what? I mean, hey, we're loud and passionate fans, so we should encourage this.
Yeah, we need everybody to be just as loud as she is so she doesn't stick out so much.
Yeah. Actually be louder so they drown her out.
You got Dr. Rubin doing the knee jerk, you know, on your knee, and she's screaming in your ear with the test results. It's just a nightmare situation.
The House of Horrors is coming alive again.
Oh, that's great.
Anything else football-wise, fellas, or we'll wrap up and get out of here?
No, man. Just excited about the hoops trajectory.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, we'll see you guys again Sunday at some point. Thank you guys again for listening. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at BreakfastWTG. Subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube at Breakfast with the Gators. We'll catch you again. Go Gators.
Go Gators.